This is Focus
with Cassie McCullough
on ABC Radio Sydney.
To the National School Chaplaincy Program, last week's budget saw funding continued for the scheme, which pays people who are ordained or otherwise recognised by an accepted religious institution to provide pastoral care to students in public schools. The idea is to provide a level of care that doesn't require an official meeting with a counsellor or a psychologist, to encourage effective coping, friendship skills and resilience in children. The funding is for $61 million per year for the next 3 years. That'll go to schools that have these programs. And it's been controversial since it was started in 2006 by then Prime Minister John Howard. It was successfully challenged in the High Court twice. And because of that, it now the federal government now grants money to the states to run the programs rather than directly. But for many, any funding at all of school chaplaincy can't be justified, particularly with the idea of allowing religious representatives into schools to counsel and comfort children. They say it's wrong and it's risky, and that the funding for this program could be far better spent on more fully qualified school counsellors and child psychologists. One of those is Dr. David Zinger. He's a former school principal and a member of the National Secular Lobby. He'll join us in just a moment. But first, let's hear from Dr. Mandy Sheen. She's a researcher in education at Edith Cowan University, and she defended the chaplaincy program on the Conversation website this week, arguing that there are many misconceptions about the role of chaplains, particularly that they may be trying to indoctrinate students into their faith. Dr. Mandy Sheen, hello. Good to have you along.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Now, you say there's no risk that chaplains will attempt to indoctrinate students. How can you be so sure about that?
I didn't say that at all. I just said that they're not meant to be proselytizing, and they're not meant to be guiding young people in a certain religious way. So I think that was the misconception I was trying to clarify, because, you know, every single human being brings values into a school, whether or not you can mandate a psychologist on how they talk to a child. I mean, it's impossible to stop people on all levels. So I would say there is a risk with every human individual that goes into a school, not just chaplains.
So there is a risk. So, okay, when we talk about the program, there are guidelines around it, and you say these guidelines should reduce that risk. In fact, they're not really supposed to be discussing their religious beliefs or attempting to indoctrinate children when they go in there.
Oh, absolutely. And, like, I'd be disappointed and if that was the case. And I'm sure that there would be a small proportion, as I've said, as with psychologists I've worked with, there's a small proportion who do the wrong thing in that field as well. But the idea is that they're there as a low level, as a filter. Like, I worked as a school psychologist and I can't talk to 1,000 children in the school. So they filter and then move to me when it's a serious issue and provide the service that I think is useful. Perhaps the religious endorsement and the name maybe needs to be rethought.
Mm-hmm. Can we just clarify your position, actually, in this? You're actually a member of, I mean, you work for Edith Cowan University in their education school, but you also are a member of the Christian City Church in Perth, and you, I believe, have worked part-time as a chaplain in a primary school in Perth back in 2003. Is that the case?
That's correct, yes. I don't receive funding from them. I don't endorse me for anything, so there's no sort of payoff for me to have a position here.
Mm-hmm. And you say that you have been a counsellor in schools. Is that what you were referring to, or is that a different experience that you've had?
Yeah, so I was a school psychologist for 3 years, worked closely with many school chaplains, did not have any proselytising while I was working with them. When I worked as a school chaplain, 7 years later, one of the students contacted me to say she'd been abused, and I managed to work with DCP to get some help for her. So that's the kind of trust and relationship you build up.
Sorry, I don't know. Again, DCP. Sorry, what's that department?
Sorry, Department of Child Protection.
Okay.
So it's about building a really trusting relationship. Just without having a case file, which can be quite detrimental to young people when they're older, having a case file that can be used in court and is not necessary for them as an adult.
So what, there's no reporting required if children go to a chaplain or in a school to raise a problem, but there is reporting required in counselling and you're saying that's problematic?
Well, there would be record keeping, but with a psychologist file, it's a different level. So you need consent to talk to the parents, to talk to the child through the parents, and that file has a special sort of quality that can be used in court that may be called up.
But wouldn't that make it more problematic that there may not be the extensive records kept of interactions between students and chaplains as there is expected to be of those relations and conversations between students and counsellors?
I think we're talking about a really different level. So we're talking about kids having a fight with their friend. So in the article I wrote, chaplains, and I should have enlarged, but short word count, they're not effective in dealing with self-harm, suicide and other issues like that because they're not meant to be. That's not their role. So, you know, they'll document that these two children had a fight and then they made up. You're not going to recall that to court or anything like that. But when issues get more complex, like, you know, self-harm such, it would be referred to the psychologist and you would then record those things for the child's life.
Mm-hmm. So what you wrote actually was about this evaluation, a government evaluation of the National School Chaplaincy Program, and it said that it was considered effective in dealing with family relationships, bullying and harassment, loneliness and grief and loss, and that 80% of principals and 60% of parents believe the program to be extremely effective in fostering a sense of purpose and self-esteem and other things like peer relationships, social inclusion and self-image. But that government evaluation did find it less effective in dealing with issues of alcohol and drug abuse, sexuality, self-harm and suicide, and racism. And there was uncertainty from parents and principals if the chaplains helped in these areas at all. So I guess, you know, the question...
I would hope that they weren't helping in those areas too. They shouldn't be, as counsellors shouldn't be either. You know, anyone can call themselves a counsellor. You don't need any degree, certificate or anything. Like, I could call myself a counsellor now. So if it's not your role, you shouldn't be working in that sort of field.
Okay, so we're kind of clear on what they don't do. They don't proselytise and they don't deal with issues that are more substantive, more serious issues. So what do they do? What do chaplains do?
Well, they go to camps. So I'd like to see a school psychologist get paid to go on a camp for 5 days, and I don't think that's going to happen. They go on school excursions. They run, like, Strength is a really great evidence-based program that's been going and shine for young people. They run breakfast clubs. They put food hampers together for families. They do Rainbows, which is another evidence-based program for grief and loss, which is very structured and you need to be trained in it. So there's lots of just small things around the school that they support, champion programs like Strength, like for kids that have done well in different fields. They'll provide extra, like, say, guitar club or art club or those sorts of things.
Okay. All right. We're talking with Dr. Mandy Sheen about the school chaplaincy program, the nationally funded program, state administered. Mandy's very confident that she feels there is no real proselytising going on. It's not supposed to be happening, but you never know. We'll hear from David Zinger in a moment. He's from the National Secular Lobby. Let's first, though, hear from Ron, who's given us a call. Good morning, Ron.
Yeah, good morning. I am a casual teacher in Sydney, and I sort of go to several schools. And I'm certainly not religious, but I think if there's going to be opposition to the religious lobby going into schools, there's also got to be some sort of control over other things. For example, I was talking to one visitor who was there teaching teachers how to cope with gender transitioning and how to, you know, look at that aspect of, you know, young people's lives. And I'm thinking, well, if that's going to exist in a school situation, well, it's fair that the other side also exists in a school situation.
Uh-huh, so it brings balance, you reckon?
Yeah, well, there's ideology being taught in schools all of the time, and this is simply another ideology that you can't actually stop. It's if you're going to have one, you've got to have the other.
I guess people would question whether, you know, gender transitions are an ideology. Many people might see it very differently.
Well, look, absolutely. I know that there is a cause for it, but there's no reason to put whole teachers through a course in gender transitioning when there's nothing, no issue of that in the school.
Well, there might be if the only other place they're getting thoughts and guidance, I suppose, I'm not sure exactly what the right word is coming from a religious representative. Maybe there's even more reason to have teachers informed about how to talk about those issues and how to support a child.
Yeah, look, I can see that point. I can understand that, but I just think the pastoral care coming into schools, or the religious stuff, is not given to everyone. It's only given to those who need it. Whereas some of this other stuff is given to all the teachers and all the kids.
All right, good one. Thank you very much, Ron. Good to have your opinion there. 1300 222 702. Now let's talk to David Singer. He's Associate Professor David Singer at Southern Cross University. He's a public education advocate. He's also a former school principal and, importantly, a member of the National Secular Lobby. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning.
So you, I'm assuming, would say the secularity of public schools is front and centre in this debate and that needs to be protected. Is that what you'd say?
Well, absolutely. From the 1870s onwards, our public school system has been called free, compulsory and secular. Secular is the key component here. We have to acknowledge that there is an incredible need, especially today during the COVID pandemic, where children are feeling isolated, are feeling frightened, are feeling that they are unsure of their future, that they do need adult support. And that adult support should be professionally trained school and youth workers who are adequately funded to be in schools, to be there to support those children. We don't need religious people to be doing that job. They're not trained for it, they're not qualified for it, and their presence as a school chaplain from a religious order, and let's be frank about it, almost 99% of them are from Christian backgrounds, presents the children with a story, if you like, that Christians are dominant. And that is not the face of Australia today. Christianity is a diminishing religion in our society. More than 40% of Australia's population do not come from a Christian background, and more people are actually on their census declaring no religion. Religion should not be having any place or work in our public school system at all. By all means, a school should be teaching about religion, and that's very, very important, along with everything else, but they should never be teaching for religion.
Okay, so let me just bring Stephen from Winston Hills into the conversation. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Yeah, just briefly, you say you got a point about religion and atheism.
Yep. Yeah, so atheism is a theist position. If you're going to ban teachers and religion from school, and teachers are not allowed to present a Christian view, then you should also be banning the atheist view because, again, that's a theist position and you can't ban one without banning the other.
Okay, is that semantics, David Singer?
Absolutely semantics. And we're not talking here about teachers anyway. We're talking here about Christian chaplains coming into schools to work with our children. What we need is to take this money, and it's more than $250 million since 2018. And the program began under John Howard in his last years. So billions of dollars have been spent on this program already. We need to take that money and spend it on fully qualified school youth workers, school counsellors,
okay,
who have a certificate or have a university degree. My son-in-law, for example, works in a very, very large secondary school here in Melbourne. He's their full-time youth worker and a qualified school counsellor and social worker. And he does all the work that's required of a chaplain and a support worker for the children. Mm-hmm.
So there's two issues there, really, isn't there? There's the presence of religion in schools, which are public and have a commitment, and compulsory. That's, you know, there's a compunction to send children there, so that's part of it. But it's also the money. So if the money wasn't there, would you have less of a problem with it, David Singer?
Well, we don't want to have religious people working in our public secular schools. And if the money is being spent, the money needs to be spent on fully qualified mental health accredited social workers who can do the job of the chaplain and everything else that's required as well.
Now,
of course, look, can I say that one of the things that principals have told me again and again and again is they'll take anybody to support their teachers and their students, and therefore, if all they're offered is a religious chaplain, of course they'll take that. But they would much rather have a fully qualified, well-trained and certified youth worker or school counsellor.
Okay. Now, you've been following this for much longer and more deeply than I have, so you know how it works. How do you feel about the rules preventing proselytising? Do you feel comfortable that they are very clear and that people going into schools are made completely aware of that expectation on them?
Look, it's the job of a chaplain, of a Christian chaplain, is to teach about their religion. That's their raison d'etre.
Mm. No, well, I mean, maybe it is just because they, you know, they have a love of fellow human beings and they wish for their well-being. You can do that without including religion.
You could, but their first principle is that they are a religious person. They come from a background of faith and total belief in that faith, and they cannot help but transmit that faith in their work with young people.
Mm-hmm. Let's just quickly go to Rachel, who's joining us from Helensburg. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. I actually have a question about why we need to have religious people as chaplains, given that these jobs can be done by religious or non-religious people. I'm not actually against people of faith being in schools, obviously. There's lots of people in faith doing wonderful jobs, and people can be counsellors as Christians or Jews or atheists quite effectively. So I'm just wondering why chaplains need to be religious.
Mm-hmm.
Julia Gillard's government, of course, didn't have a religion as part of the chaplaincy program, so why is it now needed?
Okay, well, David, I'll give you a chance to respond to Rachel, and then I'm going to go to Mandy Sheen as well.
Well, I totally agree with Rachel. Here in Victoria, where I work, the Victorian government has made it quite clear that chaplains can come from any background at all. However, they have not enforced this, and it's going to be challenged in the courts here in Victoria again, because a number of people have put up their hands to mm-hmm. be chaplains who are fully qualified to do so, but they don't have the support of a religious institution, that is a church, who will vouch for their bona fides. And
yes.
That's contrary to the Equal Rights and Human Rights Act mm-hmm. of Victoria.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess one of the other aspects of this is that ethics, there have been people who have decided to teach ethics in schools as well and be doing that under their own steam. Back to you, Dr. Mandy Sheen. I guess, you know, the question that is in my mind is, what if the money wasn't there? You know, is the money part of the motivation to be there?
The money to...
The funding of this. Yeah, no, is that a motivating factor for some religious institutions?
Not at all. When I was working as a chaplain one day a week, I was getting $90 and I could get 350 teaching on the other days. It's about service for me, and like, it's not about religion. And I agree with David, I don't think you should have to get signed off by a church. I think there's some things that are archaic and need to be rethought, but it's about the whole child. And the concern is that people are being religious, which I hate. It's about acknowledging a spiritual side to a child and not preaching at them or not teaching them, but listening to that side of the child. People don't do chaplaincy for the money. They do it to support the child.
Mm-hmm. All right. Look, we're completely overwhelmed by people sending messages. Here saying, you're all missing the point. The Liberal Party would collapse at the next election if it did not shore up its relationship with religious lobbyists. The chaplaincy program does this in one easy swoop. That's from Ben. So the politicisation there. Interesting, says someone else, how Christian schools are criticised if they don't have secular teachers, yet when the tables are turned, I'm not going to go there because that's slightly, problematic comment there. But, yeah, so, I mean, people resist this so much. I guess it's about the qualification and you know, finding people to do this who are not motivated by either money or religious evangelist purposes, I guess. And you're comfortable that's easily done and easily proved. And Mandy?
Not easily done. I don't think anything's easily done. I think, as I said in the beginning, humans come with a belief system and they drive that belief system no matter what things you put in place. But I would hope that chaplains have integrity not to do this, not to proselytise, not to push their own religion, because I think that's unethical and it actually undermines the whole system.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would have liked to give David Zinger a reply on that, but we are completely out of time. Thank you both for talking to us about this. This is an ongoing issue and I can see why it is so hot-buttoned, because all the messages and all the calls that we've been getting are split completely down the middle on this. Mandy Sheen is a lecturer and researcher at Edith Cowan University in Education, and Professor David Zinger is Associate Professor at Southern Cross University, a former school principal and a member of the National Secular Lobby. And you can find the piece that Mandy wrote on the Conversations website. Thanks again for all those messages. I'm sorry we didn't bring them more to you. Conversations is next, and I'll see you tomorrow.